Welcome to episode 19 of the SWNZ podcast, the podcast for New Zealand Star Wars fans. My name is Matt.
And my name is Christy.
Following on from our episode last week where we talked about all the new content on Disney Plus, I thought we'd talk a little bit about some of the key new titles that we've watched in the interim. I won't rehash the whole list, but particularly wanted to talk about the Clone Wars micro series, Volume 1 and Volume 2. Because that's one that we have been waiting for availability to see again, and we thoroughly enjoyed watching that as soon as it came out. And I'll touch on the story of the faithful Wookiee just a little bit, because I again enjoyed seeing that brief little animated segment, and there's a few bits of interesting trivia that I just wanted to talk about. Let's start with the Genndy Tartakovsky Clone Wars micro series. I think on Disney Plus it's just listed as Clone Wars micro series. This originally aired between 2003 and 2005, so over a span of 3 years or three seasons. Don't know how many of the audience were around at that time and recall it. If you did recall seeing it when it first came out, comment below. Over three seasons, we saw it spread over first 10 episodes, 3 minutes each. Second season, also 10 episodes of 3 minutes each. And then a third season of five longer episodes, between 12 and 15 minutes each. So they're pretty small chunks of material when they first came out, and we waited eagerly from week to week to see them as these brief little segments of story came out.
You can see this still in the way that the storytelling flows. It jumps from different scenes to scenes, particularly around some of the slightly more standalone episodes. You can sort of feel that they are jumping between different characters, but I certainly really appreciate the way that the modern versions of this micro series have edited it all together, because back in the day, watching the starting little opening scene and then the credits between every 3 minutes episode, it certainly took a long time to get through it, and there was no sort of Netflix skip credits back in those days, so you had to watch them all. But it works really well all strung together in one sort of movie length series.
So these were released originally in the era of the StarWars.com Hyperspace fan club, which again a number of you in the audience will remember fondly. There's some interesting material that came about through the Hyperspace fan club back in the day. The way they released these Clone Wars episodes, you might recall, they released them through the Hyperspace fan club first, and then after a slight delay they were available on CartoonNetwork.com and StarWars.com for the non-Hyperspace members.
I remember being very excited about that, because at the time, Cartoon Network was hard to get in New Zealand, and certainly there was no guarantees that it would screen in New Zealand. So for certainly myself, as a big Star Wars fan of around that time, in that build-up between Episode 2 and Episode 3, I was already a paid member of the Hyperspace fan club, so it was great that people all around the world could access this on the day of release. You didn't have to sort of go underground to keep up with the new cartoons.
So the story itself is interesting. It occurs, as we said before, between Episode 2 and Episode 3. It overlaps in terms of timeline with the Labyrinth of Evil novel, which dovetails directly in, both of them dovetail directly into Episode 3. I really like the Labyrinth of Evil novel. There's a few contradictions, with some fan and semi-legitimate explanations to the contradictions. For instance, Obi-Wan and Anakin don't go to the planet Nelvan at all in the Labyrinth of Evil novel. But the Clone Wars micro-series isn't considered true canon, strictly speaking, but it's many aspects of it don't really interfere with a lot of canon. They're just the background stories about things that are going on in the Clone Wars. So me personally, I'm perfectly happy to just consider it, you know, real stories from that era. I actually take that perspective for a number of different aspects of the old legacy material. Anyway, Legends material.
There were certain elements from the micro-series that were picked up and used for the Dave Filoni helmed Clone Wars series. The one that's specifically stands out to me is there's an episode in the micro series where Kit Fisto goes to the home planet of the Mon Calamari and the Quarren to deal with conflict between those two species. And in the Dave Filoni series, they do visit that planet, but the details are slightly different. So I like to think that the micro series is a somewhat sort of simplified version of some of the events that happened in the Clone Wars.
Yeah, and the main plot thing that I like the most about the Clone Wars microseries is that it explains the capture of Chancellor Palpatine, because episode 3 obviously opens with him already being a prisoner, and without that sort of backstory, there's a little bit of gap that just needed to be filled.
There's some fun little moments, like it shows the reason why General Grievous has a cough in episode 3. That's not really explained in other mediums. So there's some fun little nods. I remember specifically at that time when they talked about the fact that the last micro-series season would lead up into episode 3. So that was really exciting because it felt very connected to the film. And for everyone that was anxiously awaiting episode 3, it felt like we were sort of getting a little taste and some hints of how that movie would play out. And certainly General Grievous was introduced to the world through the micro-series. He has his very dramatic reveal in the earlier seasons, and then we see him doing more in the season leading up to episode 3.
Yeah, a good point is that it really does demonstrate how sinister and powerful he is, which again, there's a little bit of a gap in episode 3. We just jump straight into him without a lot of backstory about how much of a threat he is known to be.
Yeah, we see him taking on multiple Jedi. The earlier episodes with Grievous were before they demonstrated that his arms would be able to sort of split into four arms. So in the first couple of episodes we see him, he's basically using his arms and his legs. And then later on, when they knew more about how Grievous would be portrayed in episode 3, we see him split his arms into four and take on Jedi like that. But he is very, very sinister in the micro series. Considering it has because of the simplistic, sort of stylized cartoon animation style, it feels like it's more aimed at kids. But we do see Grievous just straight out murder several Jedi. And then when we switch to episode 3, we see him fight, but we don't really see him slay Jedi like the Jedi killer that he is sort of advertised to be in the universe.
There's aspects of the storytelling that really, again, despite it being aimed at a younger audience, there's aspects of the storytelling that really do build up the tension, both in the General Grievous introductory arc, but also in the Palpatine kidnapping arc. There's some fairly tense moments as far as storytelling goes, and I enjoyed that.
And some very humorous moments too. There's some really cute little moments, like where they're desperately trying to escape, and one of the characters is like, his hand goes out and he's just pressing the elevator button over and over, sort of just breaking the tension.
That's Roron Korob, the Ithorian.
Yeah, he's so cute.
So if you haven't seen that, do check it out. It's a must see. If you have seen it, then drop a comment and let us know what your favorite scenes were. As we said before, on Disney Plus, it's just referred to as the Clone Wars micro series. Elsewhere, it's been nicknamed or known as the Genndy Tartakovsky micro series, largely because Tartakovsky contributed to the creation along with George Lucas, but also the writing, directing, and production of the whole animated series and style. Hey, one other thing that's quite interesting to talk about, though, are the voice actors of the series. This was quite early on in terms of the modern era of Lucasfilm animation. A number of the voice talent went on to reprise some of their roles in later animated series, but not all of them did. There's some interesting names in the list. Anthony Daniels does do C-3PO's voice through the whole micro-series. Tom Kane voiced Yoda for this micro-series, but also later versions of Yoda in the animated format. Matt Lucas did Anakin Skywalker's voice, but he was replaced with Matt Lanter, if I remember correctly, in the later Clone Wars, and a different voice for Clone Troopers later on. James Arnold Taylor did Obi-Wan Kenobi in both this and later Clone Wars series. Notable is Grey Delisle. That's her maiden name. She now goes by the name. She's credited as Grey Griffin. She did most of the female voices in this micro-series, and she's actually been to New Zealand before.
As a guest, yes.
Yeah, you've met her here in New Zealand, but also overseas, haven't you?
Yes. Yeah, she does Asajj Ventress. That was, again, the first introduction of Asajj Ventress is in this micro-series. She also voiced Padme Amidala, Shakti Adagalia, and she has gone on to do voice work and other Star Wars mediums such as video games, but she hasn't necessarily kept doing the voice for these characters. But it's fun to see because she is a very well-known voice actor, and I do really like the work that she's done in the series. Just as a wrap-up point, I'm just really excited that Disney Plus has added this. You always hope that any Star Wars content can make its way to a place where we can always refer to it, because a lot of these things, like the new series, they're not giving them to us on DVDs, and a lot of this older content has never been put out on Blu-ray or other sort of HD format. This was such a important part of my early Star Wars fandom journey, and I thought I'd never have it beyond my precious DVDs, but now it being available for everyone and for so that I can tell all the Star Wars fans I come across to go watch this thing. It's now there right alongside the other sort of greats. It's just really, really exciting. And I'm just hoping that anybody that hasn't seen it should go out and watch it. It's not very long, but it's, to me, it's an almost essential part of the Star Wars sort of media out there, the way it connects with the movies.
The other animated segment that is on the Disney Plus that you've just got to jump in and see because it's so short but also so significant historically is the story of the faithful Wookiee. As we mentioned in the last podcast, this is the animated segment from the Star Wars Holiday Special where Boba Fett is introduced. It's a quirky little story designed really just to wrap around the introduction of Boba Fett in many ways, but it's fun to see. It was done by a company that went on to do the Ewoks and the Droids animated series. The company went on to do those, although not a lot of the individual people were necessarily involved, a couple were. So it's got some historical significance in that regard. There's some fun trivia about it that I didn't know, you know, historically, but I learnt more recently. Boba Fett's armor colors, they're quite unique. The pale blues in particular don't bear a lot of resemblance to how he appeared in the actual movies. And the reason for that bears a little bit of an echo to the story about action figures and the color interpretation of the original vintage action figures, and that the animators were supplied with images of Boba Fett that were the prototype costume where he was all white, and then they designed a color palette that was intended to render well both on color TV and black and white TV, which was still, you know, quite prolific at that point in time in the late 70s. So that's an interesting explanation as to why Boba Fett's colors are quite unique in that series. What do you think of that episode?
I think it's quite fun and quirky. The animation style is definitely of the era. It feels slight like those sort of old vintage caricatures of the faces. You can see that they're drawing very heavily from the actors themselves. Particularly some of the facial expressions of Han Solo feel like they are sort of like an exaggeration of Harrison Ford. And I quite like the fact that, you know, it was decades ago, but the voice actor for Boba Fett is a passable sort of gravelly voice for Temuera Morrison, even like they wouldn't have known at all, and that he doesn't actually speak that much in the movies, so they wouldn't have been able to sort of match up voice work or anything. But I think it's kind of fun the way that it almost sounds like a pretty good match for Tim after all these years.
And then, like I say, the animation led the way for the Ewoks and the Droids series. The Droids series is coming to Disney Plus later in the year. The Ewoks animated series is already there. We haven't watched our way through it in its entirety, but I look forward to getting onto that shortly. All right, let's change gears for a little bit and talk about some video games, Star Wars The Old Republic and Galaxy of Heroes. One significant thing that's taking place in both of those, Star Wars The Old Republic, the online role-playing game, is coming up on its 6.3 story update. Aspects of that are released on the public test server at the moment, but one thing that's particularly notable is that they have included content inspired by The Bad Batch, which is the animated series coming out on Disney Plus on May the 4th. As a side note, I'm looking forward to May the 4th this year. We're only about a month away from that. I'm super keen to see and hear what, you know, new material we might hear on that date. I hope we get some sort of interesting releases. But anyway, what I was saying, aspects of The Bad Batch is released in Star Wars The Old Republic. We see a number of new sets of armor that are clearly inspired by the different characters of The Bad Batch. And also in Galaxy of Heroes, the mobile game, Bad Batch are about to make an appearance?
Yeah, they've been sort of teased that they're going to be coming, which is, it's fun. I see having been a long time player of the game, in the more recent years, I've seen a much more concerted effort to tie in new releases in terms of the movies and the animated series in the shows. Like if you're a daily player of the game, you might remember that when The Mandalorian was screening, you would actually get an in-game pop-up reminding you that a new episode had come out, as well as slowly rolling through the new characters. Like we've recently had the new Mandalorian era Dark Trooper and Moff Gideon and these new characters. So it's really interesting to see this concerted effort to sort of tie in different areas. So you might play the games, but maybe you don't have Disney Plus, or do you play Old Republic, and they want you to sort of get familiar with the sort of the ongoing story, no matter how you, what your sort of main absorption of Star Wars is, whether you play games or watch it or collect the toys. We're seeing the sort of cohesive campaign, which is quite fun, because a lot of the times you see these new characters and you think that they're quite cool, and then you don't get to sort of enjoy them in the other areas.
So it's also interesting that Galaxy of Heroes is set up in a way that it can just incorporate characters from a whole lot of different eras. For those of you not intimately familiar with the Galaxy of Heroes game, even if you don't play it, it's interesting to know that it's actually turned into a really big money spinner. It's doing extremely well and has been going for a good length of time now. But why don't you quickly describe the gameplay? Because it's interesting that you end up seeing characters from animated series, from historic content, from movies and so forth.
When the game launched, I started playing just a few days after the launch, because I'd seen it advertised and I was keen to jump in. They've included expanded universe, animated movies, series, you name it. It's all there. From the early on eras, you had HK-47 from KOTOR. They have included characters from the KOTOR series 1 and 2, from the SWTOR area of games. So we see them characters like a Sith Assassin and a Sith Trooper that are very specific to that game that don't appear anywhere else in this game. We've got characters from Rogue One, Solo movie. We've got the Rebels team. We've got the new characters from The Mandalorian. And they keep it fresh and updated. They go in and tweak some of the older characters that were there from the start, like Darth Vader or Darth Sidious, so that they keep up with the sort of in-game Uber content. And some of the most recent additions to the game have been really fun to play along. I'm currently working towards getting Jedi Luke Skywalker as we see him in Return of the Jedi. They have included Kylo Ren, Rey, and Palpatine as they are seen in Rise of Skywalker. So even though these characters are in the game, they include alternate versions. Like there are two versions of the Mandalorian in the game, as we see him at the start, and then with his Beskar armor. And they have different abilities, which is really quite fun.
So the way that works is you actually have a huge library of characters, and you can assemble them into teams, and the teams don't necessarily have to be related to each other in terms of their origins, do they?
No, they have big cluster groups. And so some work, they are designed to work very specifically together. Like there is a Night Sister team, and there is the Phoenix team from Rebels. So they are designed to work very, very well together. But then there are much more broader ones where there's like the Jedi and Sith, or bounty hunters, where you can really mix and match your favorite characters. So I really enjoy it as a sort of a character collector game, but at the same time I can sort of play around, and it doesn't take a lot to really sort of get involved in the game. I play completely free to play. You don't need to pay money. It is a game that is very incentivizing to spend money. I can't remember how long ago it was, but I know that the company that makes the game has passed the $1 billion mark in terms of
$1 billion
of revenue that this game has made. So it's really quite up there in terms of there are huge Discord communities around the guilds and the content. There are YouTube creators that really keep everyone up to date with the new sort of mechanics that are brought in with different game modes of different characters. So if you're a Star Wars fan that has a smart device, I highly recommend checking it out. If you want to instead of enjoy collecting characters without actually spending money like you would on action figures, and it's a great little sort of, it doesn't take a lot of time to really sort of do the bits and pieces that you want to do every day and just, yeah, enjoy all the aspects.
So Star Wars Galaxy of Heroes, that is an interesting topic to talk on. I mean, a lot of the audience and even me to a large degree are more familiar with PC and platform games and less so with the mobile apps, partially because a number of the mobile apps have had fairly short lifespans. You get, you know, a little bit invested in them and then they pull the plug on them. That's been a little bit of the pattern that a number of them have followed over the last little while. But without a doubt, Galaxy of Heroes has survived and is thriving and looks like it's got a really strong future moving forward.
Yeah, I really like the fact that there's expanded universe going way back. You know, one of my main teams has got Darth Malak and Darth Nihilus, you know, like all sorts of characters, all the way up to we've got both a Clone Wars Ahsoka and a Rebels era Fulcrum Ahsoka.
What are some of the most obscure characters that are represented?
Some of the SWTOR ones, unless you've played SWTOR, you won't know things like the Sith Trooper from SWTOR is actually part of one of the most sort of top level teams. If you've got a Darth Revan team with Darth Malak, there's 99% of people that run that team will run it with one of the SWTOR characters, which is quite fun that even some of the more obscure characters are just sort of buried at the bottom.
Yeah, and so I agree, Sith Troopers are probably the most, because even some of the heroes from Star Wars The Old Republic, like Darth Malgus, have been represented in toy form, but Sith Troopers haven't, have they?
There's another team that I particularly like, and I'm working on gearing mine up at the moment, are the Night Sister team. This includes things like the Night Sister zombie and some of the other sort of lesser known Night Sisters. Of course, you've got Mother Talzin, Old Dukka, and even some of the sort of the hooded ones. I can't remember what they're called. They've got specific names. There's quite a few Night Sisters and you can sort of mix and match them in different teams, but they're in such a small sort of story arc in the Clone Wars, but they get their whole team in this game because they're such an interesting one. There's a whole Jawa team, a whole Ewok team. There's just about anything that you want in the game that you can put even together and make some fun teams.
You can even have a team made up of multiple versions of the same character, can't you?
Yeah, there's like five different versions of Han Solo in the game because he's such a beloved character. And there's multiple versions of Anakin. There's rumors we're going to get another version of Obi-Wan, possibly to tie in with the Obi-Wan series. So, and there's lots of starships as well. We've got all the bounty hunter starships.
There's a whole starship segment, isn't there? Gameplay aspect of that. It's just starfighter battles.
Yeah, so the Razor Crest is the most recent addition to the starfighter battles. You've also got capital ships.
Now, I don't play this game, but I have seen it on your screen. I know that there's some, I think that some of the starships are even more obscure than some of the characters, because I know there's bounty hunter starships like Houndstooth.
Yeah, that's actually one of the most powerful.
IG-2000? IG-88 ship, IG-2000
in there? Yep, and Cad Bane's ship is in there. The Houndstooth's actually one of my favorites. It's such a powerful ship in the game, and you've got things like the Y-Wings and even some of the droid starfighters that launch buzz droids on your opponents and all sorts of fun things like that. And General Grievous's capital ship even does that electronic burst. My brains can't remember what it's called, but it does that and you can sort of like disable ships on the enemy team and all sorts of fun things like that. Yeah.
Okay, good bit of a deep dive there. But it is interesting how broad and the developers and designers have delved into the lore and the canon and the old material and the expanded material to really pull that game together. Let's start to wrap things up by talking about local store reports. Not a lot we haven't reported on too much on the SWNZ website in the last week because there hasn't been a lot of movement. There are a couple of key things that have shown up. Looking at my list here, they are all Mandalorian, mostly Boba Fett themed, which is a little bit interesting. From EB Games, a few people have started receiving their deluxe 6-inch Black Series Boba Fett action figure. This is available only through EB Games at the moment in New Zealand, because it's a deluxe figure in the bigger Black Series box and exclusive to EB Games. It's priced at $64. It looks like a good figure. It looks like a good sculpt. But he also comes with flamethrower effects and harpoon effects, so he can be posed to look like he's using a number of different weapons. From Mighty Ape, there's a couple of new Pops, Funko Pops. There's a glow-in-the-dark flying version of Din Djarin, the Mandalorian. He's $25. And there's also the first from a new Bounty Hunter collection. This is a deluxe Funko Pop. first character of the 7-character series that's going to be released over a period of time is Boba Fett, not surprisingly. And they all come with interconnecting bases / backdrops that form a bit of a Star Destroyer bridge diorama. That's $64 from Mighty Ape. It's also available from a number of other pop vinyl retailers locally. That's about it for this installment, so I guess we're done doing talking. Thank you again for listening in. Really appreciate you taking the time to tune in. Stay tuned to our website, swnz.co.nz, for Star Wars news for New Zealanders, and another podcast episode next week. Jump on over to either our Facebook group or the SWNZ message boards to discuss all the latest Star Wars news with other Kiwi fans. And don't forget, you can now listen and follow SWNZ podcasts on Spotify and Amazon Music. Thank you for listening.
And may the Force be with you.